Welcome into another episode of the Talking Calcio podcast with your host, Dr. Crane Nick Frazier, alongside Claudio Villalobos. How about that one, Claudio? Does the Spanish sound pretty good to you?
Pretty good. You're improving.
Thank you very much. I try. I'm un poco español, you know? I mean, I will say nothing little about this game this past Saturday in match day 10 with Nashville SC. I mean, my goodness. 7-2 ties the highest scoring game in MLS history. Sam Surge with 4 goals. He goes down as a 19th MLS player to record this stat of 4 goals in a game. Almost had 5. He would have been 1 of 2. So that would have been kind of interesting, but did not happen. Nashville just putting up a goal fest when it comes to a game like this against Chicago Fire. And I guess you could say a little upper of a leg for BJ Callahan, that is, against his former coach, Greg Berhalter. I mean, Claudio, your initial thoughts of this game, incredible performance all around.
I mean, I don't know if a word like this will actually fit, but I'm familiar all the way around. I'm familiar. I mean, you know, the things that happen in your family when all of a sudden things happen that never happened before. Mm-hmm. You say, "What am I in the right family? I'm a visitor here. What am I doing?" You know?
It was just uncommon, right?
The only thing that comes close to anything that we've talked, it happened yesterday when we're doing the preview. When we started saying giving the score,
right?
And I said I want to see goals. Remember when I said the 3-2, and you said, "Well, you got." I said I'm gonna go out off the line here, and I said I want to see goals. Well, I guess they I wasn't expecting that many though, but I saw goals for sure. I mean I don't know, Nick. There's so many ways to look at things. You can be very positive about the performance and say, "Well, Nashville did their job," which they actually did, that they overperformed for what they've been doing. But then Chicago, I mean, wasn't there at all. What Chicago was pretty much a non-factor, a phantasmagoric, I would put it that word, presence in Jody's Field, which is very, very, weird for a Greg Berhalter's team, especially the way they've been playing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's difficult if it's difficult for us to believe it that we're on the side of the victory. I can only imagine what's going on through their minds at this point here there in Chicago, fans, players, and everybody else.
Because I mean, we're talking about a Chicago team that was pretty good the last couple of seasons before, you know, last season and so forth. This is a team that's been established in the MLS for quite some time, and to have a performance like that, sure, it's a one-off thing for sure, but at the same time, it's Greg Berhalter, former U.S. men's national team manager. Like, that should be the precedent that your team should be fundamentally sound. And to BJ's credit, too, because he's, in a roundabout way, the predecessor. He is the guy that was the fly on the wall, and he was just listening and just basically grabbing as much information from Berhalter when he was at the U.S. men's national team and put his own twist to things. And I think those things kind of separated him from Berhalter is his own twist. His twist really stood out over a lot of the game last night, or I guess match day 10, that is. And my biggest takeaway would be the response. You know, I talked about in the pregame show yesterday or Saturday is what it was. There needed to be a response. And it, not just scoring goals, but defensively being sound, in the midfield commanding the game. That's my biggest key almost every single game, is if you can command the midfield, especially under this BJ Callahan system, you will more than likely come out with a good result. Not saying a loss, but you come out with 1 point or 3 points.
You know, we talked about it, and it's funny that we keep talking about the stuff that we went through in the preview, but we discussed the fact that maybe VJ is going to have to do something that, hey, maybe he's not prepared to do, not ready to do, or that he doesn't really feel like he wants to do. But the fact of the matter is that last night's middle for Nashville, that's what it is.
Yes.
That's what it is. I mean, you can paint it many, many different colors, many different ways. I mean, you can go around the whole thing and explain why a player needs to be there and the other not, and so on and so forth. But I mean, since I've been watching and following soccer since I was a kid, and I'm old enough to know now that anytime, not that VJ has said this, but I've heard coaches all over, maybe you have to Nick, when he come and say, "Well, I have 22 players, I have 30 players," like if they were all able to perform regularly as a starter. Well, one thing is a player that comes one day and gives you what, I don't know, 90 minutes, 100 minutes on a real good level. And another one is that one that actually can give you 60 every single game, or 70. And those are, for me, the starters, the ones that show you back and forth what they can do. And then if you look at Nashville yesterday, I know we're going to go line by line, but I'm just going to state it right here.
Go ahead.
If you look at the player, if you look at the players in Nashville middle yesterday, Muil, back and forth. Jaspik, back and forth. Eddie, back and forth. And Schaffelberg. I mean, it's very difficult to play against a middle field like that any given day.
Mm-hmm. And I will say this, kind of, you know, going back in time under Gary Smith, when he had that 3-5-2, that was your I would obviously Yazbek and Tagseth were not the midfield core there, but when you had a guy like Anibal Godoy and I'll just put, for example, Dax McCarty in the midfield or just somebody that would really hold down the midfield, and having Alex Moyle and Schaffelberg as those outside guys, it just, to me, I felt like you got a lot out of it when you have your core midfield guys there, your staple points. When you have those key players, your pillars, then you're able to expand off that. And that's what I'm going to go back now to BJ Callahan in the preseason. He mentioned that this team needed to go through phases, learn it through phases. And I think now with it being 10 games under their belt, they understand the key pillars of this lineup where you have to have certain players in certain aspects. And I mean, you're right. And I think I mentioned it too in the second or third episode we recorded. And I actually asked BJ this past week in the Thursday press conference, was like, you know, BJ, on paper coming into the season, did you ever have like an idea of certain players you wanted to place against certain lineups? Because like, obviously he's going to say no, but that's a question that has to be asked. Because if you look at the paperwork and you look at the metrics, I mentioned this in the pregame show too, the quantitative and qualitative metrics from the team. Because if you look at Andy Nahar, but we'll get to him as well, Eddie Tagseth and Patrick Yazbek. Tagseth, I'm sure they have a mileage meter on him. The guy's probably running 4 to 5 miles a game.
Sure.
Like, I mean, come on. You have to look at that for perspective. So if you go up against a team like Seattle or a team like, I don't know, Claudio, give me a good example of a team that has that passes the ball a lot that can worry. Let's go Inter-Miami. There we go. Let's say Eddie Tagseth, when he goes up against a team like Inter-Miami, they're going to have to put Tagseth and Yazbek out there because, one, that's their best midfield duo, like we've already talked about, you've alluded to, but also that's the certain player that fits the system to the metrics. The metrics are telling you, hey, we need to play this guy because he's going to cover this much ground and he's going to cut off these passing lanes. You know, as for a guy like Gaston Brugman and Brian Acosta, those are more of your enforcers. I mean, that's the word I'm going to describe them as your secondary enforcers, not your frontline guys, your secondary enforcers off the bench.
Now, you know, when we agree stuff like that, because not that we know more than anybody else or anything like that. But I mean, when you see a performance yesterday, especially by the midfielders in Nashville, and then we agree that those are the guys that probably need to start most of the games. One thing that kind of catches my attention is how is BJ going to do? Because then if he doesn't have those guys or at least one of them in any given game, then he's going to have what? The correct rival, like you said? He's going to have that particular rival that allows, Brugman to perform like he did in when was that? In Real Salt Lake?
Yeah.
Or maybe, or maybe you're going to have another team that maybe is not as sharp and as speedy in the middle for Brian Acosta to come in and do his work. You know, so am I right to think, or it's just a question. I'm not trying to tell anybody that I know more than anybody, like I said. But what are we going to have to do? Or what is he going to have to do? He's going to have to actually find the right guys for the right team when these four are not available.
Well, here's what I'm going to say to that is you have guys like Wyatt Meyer and guys like Matt Corcoran, who I believe Matt Corcoran was selected for the U18, right? U18, U20 international team for the U.S. So to me, he's getting the professional experience. He's getting that next level, I guess, that next level experience. I don't know how else to describe it, but when you get those minutes at the international spectrum, then you come back to your club team, and obviously he wasn't in the lineup last night on the subs list and or starting, so which leads me to think probably a Huntsville thing, you know, go down to Huntsville and get more minutes there. But I just see it as a succession plan. I see Tag Seth and Yazback leading the way, and then when it comes to roster management and resting Yazback and Tag Seth's legs, they'll be available on the subs list. And you could either put a Brugman or a Brian Acosta in there, or maybe once or twice tweak in a Matt Corcoran or Wyatt Meyer in those games that are winnable without your core pillar guys in the midfield. And so that's kind of the question and answer I really wanted from BJ on Thursday was, is that kind of what you're leaning towards? And I'd probably asked it wrong. That's fine. No worries. But
well, I mean, I'm not going to pretend to answer questions that you have of BJ myself. But I guess he has no choice.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my guess. He has no choice, because if you're going to switch all those guys around just to rest them a little bit, or to kind of give the game, I mean, the team a new face against a particular rival, then if you're going to do that, then you have to have the right opposition for you to be successful. Otherwise, because, I mean, I don't know. And this is just after what do they say in English? Like the Monday morning quarterback. When you say, well, maybe what if BJ did not start Texas and Jazbek and Shuffleberg on that game against the same Chicago team? Would it be the same performance? Would he be in trouble? I mean, you know, it's a good question, but it's out of line. I know it is, because it's after the game.
Right.
But it could be a good question for Atlanta coming up next time, on a turf field to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for bringing up the turf field, by the way. And to kind of answer the better question to all this is, you're saying, well, what if that is the right way to do things and starting to rotate guys against teams that are in that bottom five? That's what you're looking at. Obviously, Atlanta is struggling as of late, but...
Yes, it is.
That to me, I could easily see Yazbek and Brugman, or... maybe Acosta gets his first start of the year. I would not be surprised to see that. But you mentioned the turf field, Claudio, and thank you for mentioning that. Nashville is 2-4 on away games, and four of those games were on turf. So their losses, so basically two of their four losses on the road were from turf fields. That,
I mean,
I don't know if that's a concern. I don't know if that's a...
It is. I think it is. I mean, the players state that things, mine and everything else, have to change a lot when they have to go to play in those games, like Atlanta,
Charlotte, Seattle,
yeah. Seattle, for instance, and Portland.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's different animal altogether. Now, you know, when you said that maybe if you play the bottom five of the Eastern Conference, maybe you can think about those switches and they might work. But yes, at the same time, you gotta come back to what Patrick Jazbek said in the press conference. He said, "Well, that he likes to play most of the time just like any other player, and not only that, but not only this, that they want to play most of the minutes,
right,
Nick? It's just that's how you see the team getting that chemistry inside the field that maybe is different outside of it when in practice. What, you know? I think it is. I might say." And somebody said it last night very, very, very well.
Right.
That was Hany Mukhtar. We'll probably hear something about Hany in a few minutes. But Hany Mukhtar said that he gets along so well with Shuffleberg when he's inside, because they know each other so well that it shows. And it did show last night.
It sure did. And you mentioned as well about, you know, the result if they put out a different starting lineup last night. I think it would have been a completely different result, because there's something about Jacob Shuffleberg, and, you know, we'll get back to the defensive side of things, but Jacob Shuffleberg to me brings a whole different, I guess, level to the game. To me, I think his second effort on the ball is, it definitely separates himself from Ahmed Kassem. That was one of the questions I asked BJ last night in the press conference, was that, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, does Jacob have an upper leg against Ahmed Kasem when it comes to defense work? I mean, that has to be, you have to be a full-rounded soccer player in a BJ Callahan system. And I mean, if you're not, then you're, I don't want to call you a one-trick pony, but you're I wouldn't say less valued either. You just you're a step down. You're a step down from being a full complete player. And I think BJ, my mind is all joggling over here with all these different subject thoughts, but I'm going to switch it over to the lineup purpose of it all. Not having Jacob Schaffelberg in that lineup last night would have been a huge, huge blow. Because obviously maybe Nashville still would have won, but we don't know the true answer to that because we won't. But when it comes to tweaking the lineup, like you're talking about with chemistry and so forth, Nashville, and I think BJ, he's learned from it. When he made all those tweaks 3 games ago, I think it was the Seattle game, right? Where he made a lot of those tweaks.
Seattle game.
So as a coach and also as a player, I guess you understand you got to have roster management when it comes to keeping your guys healthy. But at the same time, he understood the mistake he made. And I don't know if he thinks it's a mistake or not, but I'll say it. I think it's an experiment process. Let me rephrase it. It's not a mistake. It's an experiment process. He's a new coach in a new league. He understands the roster that he's been given. He has to tweak and experiment things throughout the year. And why not do it at the beginning of the season? And, I mean, credit to him for fixing that mistake because his team, like you said, had a well-rounded practice of a week of practice. And then they came out and won 7-2. So I think going forward, we're going to see a lot of the same lineup, if that makes sense. They're going to see a lot more Yaz back and Tag Seth in the middle. And then, obviously, when Walker comes back, I'm going to be intrigued. And you made a great point about this with Jason Palacios. He has stepped up to a whole different level.
Different in terms of, because he brings different stuff to the table, to the game, but different good. Different good. I mean, I'm guilty myself. I'm not going to talk about anybody else, but I'm guilty myself of keep looking at when a guy came into the field, especially to replace Walker under Gary, which he had to, the team had to do many times. I don't know why it seems to me that Walker missed a lot of games under him. But anyways, so we kept looking and expecting and waiting for the guy that was going to come back and replace him and be, not be him, but he's something that could make us forget a little bit about Walker, and nobody could.
Be now, that true Jason, leader.
Yeah, and Jason is not the same at all. He's got this very different, but his leadership is different. He's quiet, he's whatever it is, but he carries himself in a way that the rest of the defense, now we're probably got to go into that subject anyways, the rest of the defense calms down with him there.
Yes.
In such a way that everything seems to sail under very, very calm waters when he's in there. You know, and if he needs to pick up the pace, he does it as well. And the other guys seem to have managed to just like they do, and they said it this week a couple of times already to us, Nick, that they have been able to adapt to his needs in terms of communication.
Yes.
Well, they have done the same with the inside the pitch to understand that he's not the same pace as Walker. He's not as fast as Walker. He's not better probably be on going back and forth like Walker does. But then again, I might be wrong. He did go up all the way there and score that beautiful goal last night as well. So, I mean, it seems like any time we try to do, not on purpose, of course, try to talk about any faults that he might have in this game, he chose no.
Yeah.
Not.
The next game he shows up and shows you that those faults are not real.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which I love it when he does that, or any player.
It's almost like the stars are aligning where he's actually maybe listening to the podcast and he goes, oh, maybe I should correct that. And he does. Maybe he's a big fan. Hey, Jason, if you're a big fan, let us know. I appreciate it. but anyways, no, you're right. The communication thing, and I was one of those people that was kind of curious about it. And Yazbek even mentioned in the Thursday press conference that, you know, learning words like up, down, left, right, just the simple English words that can go a long way. Because like you said, Jason Palacios is not the true vocal leader, but he is a leader on the field. His play shows how good of a player he is. And that's to me, speaks more louder than his actual words. If he's able to command the field with his play, everything else can take care of itself. And I love too. I gotta give more credit to BJ Callahan, and it's kind of an easy credit to some people, but I think it's a very important credit. Putting Jason Palacios on the right side next to Andy Nahar, who is an also Spanish speaking player, is vital. Because if you go put Jason Palacios on the left side and Jack on the right, and maybe Jack is better with the foot, is better with the ball at his foot on the right side, well, then you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. You're fighting yourself. You then put Jason Palacios on the left, where there's no Spanish speaking players on your team, and then you have to force him to try to figure things out and not have somebody talking to you and communicating you consistently. So I think having him on the right is just, it's a vital importance to this lineup, because Andy Nahar, I think, also can help him, but it helps Andy as well. There were a few times last night where Nashville almost got caught with their pants down when it came to getting caught on the counterattack. But Andy Nahar and his communication is incredible. He was involved in the attack so much last night. He had not one, not two, three assists. He had his own hat trick of himself for three assists on the night. It's incredible. I think he has been one of those guys that, and I'll kind of backtrack in my notes here, but he's one of those guys that has allowed Nashville to evolve their offensive style. And it's given them a true identity on offense. Whereas on defense, he still comes back, but it also has evolved not only Andy Nahar, but Daniel Lovitz. Under Gary Smith, we saw Daniel Lovitz in that 3-5-2 where he was forced to be put into attacking positions that maybe he was comfortable, maybe he was not. And let's be honest, Claudio, Daniel Lovitz is no spring chicken. His legs are not as great as Eddie Tagseth or an Andy Nahar.
No,
he, I agree. Now, he has some spurts where he can, but he's not forced to. And another credit to BJ and how he shapes his style in this 4-2-2-2 is that he's able to, you know, work to the strengths of the players, and the players understand it. It's almost like a loving relationship with the game. It's beautiful soccer. It is beautiful football, as some may say. And I just love to see the fact that Daniel Lovitz has adapted so well to this BJ Callahan system, and it's allowed Andy Nahar to go up in the attack, which is great. And we never saw that under Shaq. I think Shaq kind of held his ground a little bit and stayed back, and it was a true back four sometimes when Gary would shift to that diamond and that 4-1-2-1-2.
I do remember last season standing up there at the Vanderbilt Health Training Center, mm-hmm. I think that was the time when we found out that BJ's style was different in many ways. But one of the styles, put it that way, that he chose different from other coaches is the fact that they allow the media not to get involved but to be witness. Mm-hmm. A little longer of several things, so we're being able to see more of what he does in the field than maybe we did with Gary, and I mean I appreciate that very much myself, and I do. And this is why right now is a very good time to talk about something that I saw at that time, just because you brought it up. We were watching the little game they do at the end of every practice,
yes.
And I remember BJ was on top of Lovitz for a long time. You know, he was like pushing him and talking to him, and Lovitz didn't enjoy that part, not because we were there. He didn't care less about us. He just didn't like the fact that the coach was pushing him so much, maybe because of the experience he has as a defender with Nashville, but also at the time it felt to me that I don't want to put words in his mouth or anything or thoughts in his mind
or the perception
I got is that oh my gosh, man, I still have to go different for this coach one for another coach once more, and the fact was that why was BJ so pushy at that particular time? He was trying to tell him, hey, and I remember he's screaming at him, Lovitz, you have to get up there. You have to be up there, close to the big box when we're attacking. Well, that's what we start defending right there, not back here. And that's Lovitz today. That's Lovitz today. He's showing, I don't know. They're different. They're just different players. Maybe he doesn't have what Andy Nahar has, but Lovitz been there. He's been. I mean, I think he's got already three assists as well this season.
Yes, and a goal.
And a goal. Well, that's a new Lovitz for me. in terms of what I love the fact that he's getting involved so much in the defense office as well. That's particular principle for BJ. He defends him so well, and now his players have swallowed it. They're chewing it. I'm not saying, I don't know if I'm saying this word. They're chewing it, mm-hmm. and they're finally digesting as well, and he chose.
They're getting the information and they're processing the information. Yeah. I understand what you're saying there, Claudia, for sure. And two, like, and back me up on this a little bit if you can, Claudia. And there's nothing against the way Daniel Lovitz plays, but I felt like under Gary, I felt like we were going to see Lovitz out the door sooner rather than later, just the way that system was. But I think under BJ,
I agree.
BJ, it's kind of revitalized, not his career, but just revitalized my perception and thought on how players can truly play longer. I mean, you know how much... Go ahead.
For you, we interrupted you, but it's just the same topic. Weren't we at the media box many times thinking about who needs to come and replace Lovitz? Many times we talk about that stuff. Didn't we? Now we don't even think about it.
No. And I think you can give more credit. Yeah, give more credit to BJ. I think he brought this team to bare bones and built it all the way back up. That's what he's building it back up. And because he's got the most out of Jack Mayer. He's got the most out of Walker. This season, before the year started, he said, I want Walker to defend. Well, by God, he has made him defend. Unfortunately, Walker's out right now with his little head injury for concussion protocol. But once he's back, I mean, that middle pairing and... I don't want to make it sound bad on Jack Mayer's part because he's had a pretty exceptional season so far, but I think your new pairing in center backs is going to be Walker Zimmerman on the left and Jason Palacios on the right.
I would agree. I would. The only problem I have with that is that one thing is to see Walker right playing mm-hmm. right, then see him on the other side.
Well,
it's not the same Walker. And I don't know. And I don't know if that's something. I don't know how risky that would be, but. I mean, I would love to see Jason and Walker playing together to see, you know, I would love to see that. But the issue with the left foot is something that really stays on coach's mind before they make decisions like that.
Sure. I think it is a little bit of a concern. But I think for me, the language barrier for me is more important than seeing Walker on the left side. I know that sounds kind of, you know, not as strong to say, but I think having Jason on the right and having that Hispanic communication with Andy Nahar, I think is more important because let's face it, Walker Zimmerman has been almost to every single event in his career when it comes to the national team, MLS, whatever it may be. He's won championships. Then it comes to the point now where I need to be a veteran. I need to be a guy that can be a vocal leader. We talked earlier about being a leader. Jason shows the leadership on the field. So does Walker. But also, Walker is a vocal leader. He can lead this team to a whole nother level. Oh, and sure. I think with his vocal communication, and Walker's good with, and that's something I've picked up on too. I don't know if Jack's like this a little bit he is, but Walker's really good with pointing things out on the field. He's a direction pointer, which is also good for a guy like Jason who, you know, maybe not is the best of speaking English. And maybe that's okay to say for Jason that he stays on the left and put Walker back to his normal spot on the right.
Now, we just talked about how Jason has been not shutting us up, but at least he's showing that stuff that we might have a little doubt about.
Right.
That'd be funny when he comes and plays on the left. And he comes, what do you say, Nick? What do you say that one time on the podcast?
Well, I mean, I'm not insulting him. I'm not insulting.
No, I know you're not. I'm just saying I'm joking around because that's what he's done so far.
Yeah.
That's what he's done.
He proved.
Anytime we doubt a little piece of his game, he comes back and say, hey. You know, he doesn't even might know that.
Proves us wrong.
He just performed. That's right. He proves us wrong, and that's it. And I, like I said, I love when a player does it. Now, I mean, and we talked about all the defenders. When you go, and we mentioned a little bit earlier about the guys in the middle, and there is one guy that we didn't talk much about, but he's always been there.
Who's that?
I mean, if you actually want to talk about a Nashville, there is a guy that actually his face has been all, there all the time. And we don't talk much about it, which is Alex Mwill. Mm-hmm. And Alex Mwill has really been a stubborn starter for this team against all odds. against whatever you used to throw at him. Another Jason, if you want to put it that way. Alex has been doubted many, many times for us, for anybody, from the fans. I don't know about the coaches, maybe not. But he's still there. He's still proving himself. He's still fighting. He might have a not-so-good game next time or, you know, whenever. But then he finds a way to come back, and he finds a way to force the coach to start him again. And he chose Bakin that he's that great player. I mean, we've been talking about Taxet and Jasbeck and even Jacob Chaffeber, mm-hmm. the kind of game they had on Saturday. But, I mean, if you push me, Alex Mühl played the best game of his season mm-hmm. this past Saturday.
Had an assist.
And he fought every ball. He ran back and forth. I mean, he's just one of those pieces that Nashville can't afford to lose or have it on the bench, in my opinion.
I agree. And, you know, Claudio, somebody that we have not spoken about, and we're roughly 30 minutes into this podcast, I think you know who I'm mentioning, huh? Hani Mukhtar.
Well, that would be the next. We talked. I knew it was him because we talked about him in the preview.
Yes. Remember? Indeed. We've been asking and just hoping our questions could be answered. Where has the number 10 been? And I think, you know, it's good to see a guy like Hani Mukhtar kind of finally flourish on the field when it comes to scoring two goals against the Chicago Fire. I mean, he has, what, eight goal contributions or eight goals and two assists against Chicago in his career, two hat tricks. Yep. I mean, I just want to know what's on his dinner plate going into that game. I mean, is it pasta and meatballs? What is it? I mean, this guy, it's just something about the jersey. I really don't know. I mean, this guy is something else.
What does he have to be something Italian anytime you talk about food?
It's talking calcio. Come on. We're talking some soccer here in the Italian.
Yeah,
we talk
about Hani. Hani's not Italian. Come on.
But that's okay. On the podcast, he can eat Italian food. It's all right. One of these days, I'll show him what good Italian food is, okay?
All right. There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, because exactly. You haven't shown me yet, and I do this all with you all the time. So
look,
I
mean, I've brought...
Just to let our listeners know, cleaning up the house a little bit here.
Oh, okay. Well, I brought you cookies the one preseason game. I said I couldn't bring any more food to the press box. So, I mean, I'm just putting that out there. So, hey, I got some defense there, just putting that out there.
Just leave it a question. How long do you spend baking those cookies?
There were $3.99. That's how long I spent on making those cookies. $3.99 in the box. That's what it was.
For some reason.
But anyways, back to Hani. You know, I asked him a question, you know, with him not getting a lot of attention and a lot of players around him getting attention, just getting more opportunities on net. I asked him, would this lead to more opportunities for him scoring? And this is what Hani had to say.
I think a good team has a balance, right? Like, you know, we saw that against New York, beginning of the season. They pressed us and we still want to play 1-2 and try to find, break the lines. You know, sometimes there are different ways. You know, if they offer us space in behind, we saw the goals with Sam. Or Schaffelberg, the penalty, just use the space, and it's not like just kick and rush, you know, like it's a cultured ball, and you know, like it's basically a pass to the space for a player, and that opens up space, and then we can play from there.
Great way to describe the way that this team is playing.
Yes, I mean, sure.
You know, speaking about just Hani as that number 10 role, getting into those pockets and allowing other guys, you have to be a team. I think BJ's really brought out that this team is a true team. They actually exude the word team. They all, it's like a pulley system. Every single thing has to work at the same time. Or it doesn't work. And I think Hani described that well. As for his play, he's starting to, I guess, get to where he wants to be in the season. Obviously, he's not no golden boot guy going forward. Sam Surge is actually, I think, one goal off the golden boot right now. But Hani is that contributor where we said at the beginning of the preseason, BJ is going to use him as a decoy for a lot of things. And then we got to the same point of, well, if he's going to be a decoy, then he'll take the penalty kicks. Well, he hadn't been doing great with the penalty kicks, and Sam Surge is taking over that duty. So it's almost he is doing great. It's almost like, you know, Hani is looked at as an afterthought to some people, but no, this guy is contributing off the ball, and people don't realize it, but he is contributing in many ways, many, many ways.
To me, and I've said it many times, and I keep saying it all the time, he's become a better player, a better football player. Not just the scorer that we had in the first two seasons, and he was happy doing it. The team was happy to do it. Probably that's what gave him the MVP. You know, the many goal contributions. But in terms of what a team needs from a leadership on that position, the honey that plays for Nashville today, for me, is even better. Even better because he makes all the guys flourish in their games. I mean, the fact, there's no question about it. He even said it last night on the press conference, Sam Surish. He even said correctly, when Danny plays, again, Hanny plays behind me, a little behind me, not on my same line, then things go better for both of us. And that's true. That's very true. And like I always stated, that Hanny is not going to miss much in terms of scoring goals. Maybe he's not going to be the same prolific goal scorer that we used to have, but still he's going to be up there. He's going to have his chances in just about every game. But now, kudos to VJ again, because, I mean, I'm not pretending here, not today, not before, not ever, that I know anything about more than anybody else about what happens inside the locker room.
I agree. Because
it's just not the case. But we always felt it, and I think even the fans felt it at some point, that under Gary, Hanny was more of some player that was on his own right. He probably will manage me himself the same with the way he wanted, the way he wanted to do things. Of course, Gary will allow him. I don't think that's the case with BJ. Without them getting in conflicts and stuff, even Hanny mentioned yesterday that he had a couple of talks with BJ. Why would he have those talks with BJ? Because BJ, even though he's a very nice guy, he's a very cool coach, he gets along with all the players, he got, like he says, those principles that he's not going to break for anybody.
I agree.
So, you know, if it's good, his name is Hanny, his name is Sam, his name is Alex, his name is Jason, it doesn't matter. These are my principles. This is what I go by, and my team's going to go by those principles. And I'm talking about all kinds of principles. So I would have loved to, like they say, I would have loved to be that fly on the wall mm-hmm. when that conversation went on. But I can only imagine what it was. I mean, I'm unhappy because of this. I'm unhappy because I'm not taking penalty kicks anymore. I'm, you know, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. I can hear you. We can work together. But still, my principles, my way I think about it, the manage my team, that's, I'm sure he said that there shouldn't be any discussion about it.
Yeah. Exactly. And you mentioned about Hanny under Gary. You're right. It almost felt like Gary catered to Hanny. Like, hey, we're going to play this week. Hanny, is this good for your play? You think this is good? Yeah, this is great. Because everything under Gary, when Hanny played in that 3-5-2 or that diamond, that 4-1-2-1-2, everything had to go through Hanny. Everything yes. played out of the back to the midfielders.
Oh, not anymore, right?
No, not anymore. In that diamond, it was Alex Mull, Schaffelberg on each side, passing it into the middle to Hanny, and Hanny either turned and went to shoot the ball, or he went to go pass it to Sam Surridge or Teal Bunbury or whoever was on top there. It just didn't work out. With this BJ, with BJ Callahan, it works. Hanny is dropping into space.
Adding to your point, Nick, and you know I'm not wrong when I say this. We heard players, I mean, outside every channel that we could actually admit, talking about the frustration they feel about that situation with Gary and Hanny micromanaging everything inside the field. They were frustrated, many of them, because of that. That is not the case anymore, is it?
No, it's not. I think the micromanagement is gone. I don't know if you recall. I don't have the audio for this, but I have it on my phone. Do you recall the press conference after the game where I asked Gary Smith? I said, "Do you think you've lost the locker room?" And that was the first time ever.
He didn't like that one.
No,
he didn't like that one.
He did not. And I hate that I had to ask that question. But I mean, at the time, it had to be answered. Like, it was a valid question. Like, because the team wasn't playing well. I think they lost like 3 or 4 games in a row. And that was the first time ever a coach just kind of said, "Hey, do you know what losing a locker room is like?" And I was like, "Yeah, I do." And then I gave him my synopsis of an answer. And he was like, "Oh, okay." And so I just felt like, I felt like I didn't say I told you so. But it just felt weird. It really felt weird. I don't know. But back to the whole BJ Callahan Nashville SC 2.0. A good win last night. And yeah, very productive. Yeah,
we still need to talk about the main guy last night.
Oh, I'm getting to it. I'm teeing it up right now. I'm on the golf course, good. Teeing up the driver. This is it. The big old drive, 300, 400 yards. Sam Surridge now is one.
Sorry to correct you. Oh. Sam, the talisman, Surridge.
Thank you. The talisman, Surridge.
Full name, please.
Sam, the talisman, Surridge. Puts away four goals in incredible fashion. I was just looking at the field. I'm thinking, there's one. There's two. Oh, there's his hat trick. There's his second one in the MLS. Or it's the second one under Nashville SC. And then I saw the through ball go up to the top of the box. I was thinking, oh, my goodness, he's going to score a fourth goal. It was almost like a given. And sure enough, he puts it away. I was like, all right, we are now reaching historic benchmarks across the team, personally on Sam Surridge's part, league-wide. I mean, he is now the 19th player in MLS history to record a four-goal game or four-goal match. That's just unheard of. And you know, the crazy thing is, he is the second player to do it in 2025.
And you know, this is so interesting because obviously everybody would say, well, but two of them were penalty kicks. Yeah, but we're witnesses right here at home. We're not going anywhere that penalty kicks are missed as well. And you even lose games because of that. But what I got to go to is the next step, the next two goals. Because as much as we have talked about the performance that our midfielders had yesterday at the game, we have to think about the two of the goals, at least two of them for Sam, were balls that the midfielders didn't even only saw it, watch it coming up, go in the air with those great two passes by Andy Nahar, and he just finished them. I mean, that's right there. It's not only a fact of what the team can do, but how different some players approach the game depending on the circumstances. And Andy Nahar showed to me yesterday that all of a sudden, he's got a big connection with Sam Surridge up there. Two identical goals, two great passes over the top of the back defenders from Chicago, and of course, Sam did something that's not easy. A lot of players just miss those balls and blow him or throw him anywhere. He just calmed down, put him down, scored both at the same time. I mean, that was just an awesome display by Andy and Sam on those two connections last night.
Multiple things about your comments here. Andy Nahar, you are absolutely right. That guy is a stud at right back for Nashville. The one thing I love most that leads into my next point is the overlapping runs. Instead of going on the outside, when he goes inside and he goes directly to goal, to me, that just shows that he has the full command of the offensive attack. He is able to create chances for not only Sam Surridge, but that dragging run behind, normally it would be a midfielder or Hani Mukhtar in some case, that dragging run behind at the top of the box, he has that ball to put back, and Sam's there to be almost like a dummy, a blocking guard in some ways to the goalie, the opposing goalie. And I think the creativity of that is genius. And also, if that doesn't work out, here's the thing I love most, and it's bringing out another aspect of Jacob Schaffelberg's game, is it forces him to cut inside. Something that we did not see last year under Gary Smith with Jacob Schaffelberg. It was more of, play the through ball, play the ball down the field, and let his speed take away the rest. And even BJ Callahan mentioned it last night in the press conference that, you know, Jacob's more than just, you know, running down the field and having all this speed. He got to utilize more out of him. And sure enough, one of those aspects was him creating the chance for Sam Surridge's penalty kick. Like, you got to think about that. If Sam Surridge did not have his four goals, it was primarily one of those was because of Jacob Schaffelberg. Jacob Schaffelberg's second effort to get the ball and then getting fouled in the box, full credit to him. He's able to finish it. Boom, boom, boom. The other one, I also would say contributing to Jason Palacios' goal would be Schaffelberg going for that ball, and it ends up leading to a corner kick. If he doesn't go run for that ball, guess what? That ball, it's getting taken up by the center back, passes it to the goalie, then they go into transition, Chicago does. If Jacob Schaffelberg doesn't go after that ball for Jason Palacios from that corner kick, We wouldn't see a 7-2 victory. Might just see a 6-2 or 6-1.
It's kind of interesting. We just see, again, like we watch football so many years, Nick, and it's kind of interesting to see a guy which is not old. I mean, how old is Sam right now?
He's around my age, I think, 26, something like that, 27 well, I mean, maybe.
He's
maybe playing, younger.
He's playing a lot of years already because of the time he went in the English Premier League.
Right.
But it's very interesting to see a guy like that has changed his name, his game so much for the good. He's improved so much as he got into Nashville, maybe because of necessity. Mm-hmm. Maybe because of it. It started like that, but he actually embraced the whole effort, embraced what he had to do to get close to the ball, to try to go back to his goals, like he said last night. And you know, that switch in mentality and in the way you approach your arrival into a team really shows a true professional, in my opinion, because he could have just said, well, I was brought here to score goals. If I don't get the ball, how am I going to score? You know, that could have been a position that a lot of strikers take, and that's it. You know, as long as the ball doesn't reach me, some of the guys have to do the rest of the work. Well, Sam has actually decided that no, he if the team needs his work behind the line, even at the second line, he's going to do it. He's done it in a very, very professional way and in a very nice way, I might add. A lot of times we find strikers who can put the ball away easily and in a very well, good form. But how many times you see those strikers being sloppy, dumb, stupid even with the ball when they had to bring him from further distance behind the line? We see that all the time.
Yeah,
well, we Sam has shown he's become a big problem for defenders inside the area, inside the box, and even outside of it when he comes to three quarters of the field and start bringing those balls up. So that's he's become a more complete player, in my opinion.
Yeah,
as well.
You just took the words right out of my mouth. I'm going to say, I think under BJ Callahan, and I'll reiterate this once again, he's bringing out so much out of all these players. I think he's unlocking a lot of skills that a lot of these players didn't think they had. I'll have to go back and do the tally, but does Walker have any goals this season yet? Not yet, right?
No, not yet.
So think of it this way. You got two goals.
He did score once.
Oh, yeah, the header. There was a header.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
So Walker Zimmerman has a goal. Let's see. Josh Bauer has two goals. Jason Palacios has a goal. Andy Nahar has a goal. Daniel Lovitz has a goal. That's six goals, Claudio, from the defense alone.
Kasam has two.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about defense in general.
Yeah, defense. Defense, yeah.
Think about that. BJ has gotten out so much out of the defense, scoring six goals out of their first, 10 games? That's almost a goal a game. That's incredible. So then you go and look and say, oh, wow, our attack with Sam Surge, they're actually producing two. You don't have to worry about the extra goal contributions because our defense is also contributing as well. Everything is happening on every single phase of the game. And this team, I think they're the hottest team in the MLS right now. Minus the whole 7-2 victory, I think tactically this team is the hottest team in soccer.
It has to be. And the word that BJ uses a lot of times, that a lot of people say, well, I mean, he always talks about that. He uses the same word, consistency.
Yeah.
If anything this team is lacking is that. That consistency needs to be there and remain there every single game for 65, 70 minutes. You know, I know BJ would be the happiest to have this done, but that's what the team needs. If they're able to find that, and we'll see again on the game going to Atlanta, you know, because we've been to back and forth, right? Remember, we talked about very well about the victory here against Real Salt Lake, and then they went over there, had a very good first half in Charlotte, and the second half also was awful. And then they came back here and played well. Now, we need to see that replicated in the next game up at least once. We're not saying that from now on Nashville's going to win everything or going to earn points in every time they play. No, but consistency on that. And I guess, again, would that consistency come with having the same lineup or most of the same lineup every game, Nick?
Yes, I would like to see the same lineup going into Atlanta right now, because if your team put up seven goals against Chicago and you're going up against a team that is not great, here's what I would do. Here's my approach. You're going into Atlanta, you put that same starting 11 out you had against Chicago. And if you end up getting out to a hot lead of 2-0, 3-0 in the first half, make your subs. Start making your subs. Can you make a maximum of 5, right? After COVID, you can make a maximum of 5 subs, right?
Yeah.
Plenty. That's plenty. You could take out Sam Surridge, rest his legs if you want, or let him keep scoring. Whatever you want
to
do.
Especially, again, we go back to especially in a turf field.
Yes. Thank you for mentioning
the
turf field.
If you can replace players at that from that field and give them less minutes, I think it's healthier, in my opinion.
My only thing, the reason why I mentioned Sam Surridge first when talking about just subbing guys out, when you have a guy like that that's hot on the field right now that's scoring goals, you don't want him to, you know.
You want to take care of him, right?
Yeah, you don't want him to pick up a slight injury of some sorts. I think the only fault that I could say about Sam Surridge's style of play or game of play right now is that every time he goes up for a ball or he's going to fight for a ball, he ends up slipping. He ends up sliding. We even mentioned in the press box, it was Ben Wright, Valera, you and I, and we were just sitting there. And that was the one thing that kind of just stuck out. Like, every time he goes down, is he hurt? Is he hurt for a couple weeks? No, he just fell. It's no big deal. So I'm thinking under a turf field, because I've played on them before for soccer and also, you know, American football, they have a different feel to them. Obviously, these MLS players, they're used to playing on different surfaces, but the ball rolls differently. If you hit a ball, I call them a ping pass, you know, where you can kind of glide it on the top of the turf, that ball rolls differently. It doesn't roll, it slides, which is a little bit odd because then you have to open up your hip a little bit, and once the ball is coming to you, you absorb it. You have to absorb that pass, and then that's so the ball doesn't, you know, glide off your foot. And then you have to turn. There's a lot of things and a lot of nitty-gritty things to the game that you have to kind of tweak. And also the cleats. You have to remember the cleats. They have to use those plastic ones. Excuse me.
Plastic ones.
So it makes me think, do you have to get longer studs for the plastic ones? Because, I mean, when I was playing, there was a lot of those times where I had two pairs of cleats. I had one that were the metal studs. I had interchangeable ones where the metal studs, I could take them out and put longer ones in for one of those soft fields, that is. And then once
wet fields, yeah.
Yeah, the wet fields, thank you. And then once we had to go play on the turf fields, that's where I was like, great. And, of course, where I went to high school, turf field was our home field. So I had to wear the turf cleats majority of the time. And let's just put it this way. I slipped a handful of times.
Yeah. You know, one thing that is sometimes it's easily to leave behind when you talk about a victory like this one with Nashville so clear and so big is when you see the subs coming in. Because as difficult as it is to come as a sub in a game like the one in Seattle, when your team is getting beat up, when your team is being pretty much walked over, run over and everything else, as difficult as it is there, it's just as difficult when you have to come in and your team is beating the heck out of somebody. And you know, I take my hat off to these guys that came in as a sub because they tried their stuff. They tried to do their stuff. I mean, Bunbury had two chances. He looked for him. He fought for him, and he almost got one. I mean, Brugman, right in the field, in the middle of the field, he got a big shot that he could have scored probably the best goal of the game. I mean, I like that stuff. I mean, I like it. It doesn't matter. I mean, as long as you can keep that attitude of coming in 1-2 minutes, no matter what the score is, and you can give your best, then you're looking at you're actually adding up in terms of getting more minutes and more opportunities. I just mentioned those two, but you know, it could be the other ones too. But it just struck me like, wow, man, these guys keep fighting like if they were losing the game.
Yeah.
That was awesome to watch as well.
It's like a confidence. It's like a moxie that this team has. Yeah. And even BJ alluded to it, I think, a couple press conferences ago, a post-match. It was a home game. Might have been Real Salt Lake. I can't recall. But I asked him about Ahmed Kasem on the ball and just about his confidence. And there was, you know, a few times where maybe, you know, he could have passed the ball off and asked him, does he like that flashy stuff if you're a coach? And he goes, yeah, I love that our players have confidence in what they're going to do. I encourage that. It's not, you know, anything that he doesn't want to encourage. But when you have a player...
He likes the players to show what they have.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I think is... unlocked a lot of these skill sets for a lot of these players with BJ Callahan is that he's allowing the players to be themselves. He's not landlocking these players to play under his system and pass the ball this way. It's we're going to play this system. You're going to play your skill set and that's going to reflect on how we do things. And I think it's genius. That's what a true soccer coach should do.
I'm sure he tells him that the team play is actually going to bring better results. I'm sure he does, but still he's not calling any wings or anybody to anybody.
Oh no,
he's letting them fly, which is awesome in my case, because nowadays in many teams in many latitudes in soccer and football, that's what you see. I mean, great players under this coach that doesn't let him fly, doesn't let him do anything, doesn't let him be creative. It's always like everything was on the drawing board, mm-hmm. and if you're not doing what we draw on the board, then I guess you're gonna have to come and sit with me. And that I believe that's just not football, in my opinion. That's not the football I like.
Right.
So
more artistic style soccer. I'm with you on that.
I mean, something I enjoyed watching, not just winning.
Right. Not just staying pen to paper and staying just to the book. Have a little creativity to it. I agree.
Right.
Now, yeah. to my last point, because we're going to now get into the Atlanta conversation. We've kind of talked about it a little bit. What do you want to see out of, I guess, if Walker is, you think Walker will be back this week or no?
No, I don't think he will. I mean, it's Starf. He's not going to be coming in. No.
Yeah, bad conditions. You're right. I don't know. For me,
you try to come back on one of those three games in a row here at home. That's what.
Yeah,
you see.
They have a slew of games coming up.
Yeah, that's what we'll see him there. Yeah.
You think he makes his? You know what? I'll make a prediction on the podcast. I think Walker makes his return from injury on the U.S. Open Cup game against Chattanooga.
No, I don't think there's any need for him to come on that game. Myself,
you don't think so?
No, not at all. I think he comes back in the second game that they have. I don't have scheduled right here. But maybe I can have it real quick. But I think he comes back in the second game at home from those three that we were talking about. I mean, let me see right here real quick. That would be, they have, the Cup. They have Charlotte. They have New York Red Bulls and D.C. I believe he's going to be back, in my opinion, against that Wednesday night against New York Red Bulls.
Okay. Good to know. I don't know. I'm thinking, if this team stays hot in the way they're playing, yeah, you're probably right. But I'd like to see them in the U.S. Open Cup because it would bring fans in. It would bring in just a lot of eye-catching, eye-popping stuff. And maybe Nashville gets a big win on that night. I mean, as long as they just keep continuing to play this way, there's no
Chattanooga. That's unheard of, isn't it?
The Red Wolves, right? Little Red Wolves. Yeah,
the Red Wolves are visiting Nashville to Open Cup. I love Open Cup. Yeah. I love Open Cup. Besides the fact that it's the history of the particular tournament, like which I found amazing, that it has to be the United States, which the history of soccer is so new here. Actually, for having 100 and some. Old tournament. That's unbelievable.
See, that'd
be like if I find me a country that is not the United States where baseball has been played on a tournament for over 100 years. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's any. That'd be very like, wow, man. No.
Yeah, I love the U.S. Open Cup because of that history factor and the fact that all these MLS teams didn't want to play in it or whatever that dispute was. It made no sense to me that tournament was going to turn into a minor league tournament, which was, it'd be stupid because you got to keep the history aspect to it. And I think also for Nashville, and you make a good point for me here, is that Nashville being only in one tournament this year is a good transition phase for them going into this Nashville SC 2.0. They are not jumbled up with staying in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, Leagues Cup, U.S. Open Cup, MLS playoffs. That's four things right there that they were all kind of intertwined with last year. Not U.S. Open Cup, but still a lot of tournaments. This year, you only have to focus on the U.S. Open Cup and MLS playoffs.
I mean, and not only that. I mean, when you have this, the Open Cup to me has a lot of different positive stuff. One of them is the fact that teams within your own state play the professional teams. And even if a diehard fan of Chattanooga, there might be some or many,
right?
Maybe they might be thinking that, well, maybe I'm more than an Atlanta United fan, that I might be, because of distance, that I might be to Nashville. I don't know, whatever that might be the case. But maybe when he comes to see Nashville and see the game and see everything, then he said, well, maybe I can revisit that. in staying within the state in terms of being a fan of this team and make the whole thing bigger in terms of fan base. So the U.S. Cup, the Open Cup, does a lot of stuff behind the curtains that people don't understand. And it would be a shame, like you said, hopefully that was the last time we hear about MLS teams trying to boycott the whole issue. I mean, that's just crazy. I don't know. That'd be a disgrace.
If you're trying to grow the game in North America, you got to stay in it. You got to be involved.
You got to stay there. Yeah.
But
so hopefully we have a lot, big turnout too.
Oh, I agree. Now, obviously, we've kind of touched and gone everywhere else besides talking about Atlanta and so forth. Mentioned the game a little bit. Haven't mentioned it. Your score predictions. What do you think happens? Who scores? Give it to me.
In Atlanta.
Yes, in Atlanta.
Well, we'll probably be talking about it before that. But, I mean, I believe if Nashville can – the recent history, which is just this weekend, tells that there is a big difference between these two teams right now in terms of how the dynamics, the scoring, the way they are approaching the game. And this is something that Nashville will need to and should take advantage of. Nashville should go into Atlanta and bring a victory. And, of course, if you're hoping, anybody who's thinking about another 7 or another 3 or another 4, well, think about it again. A victory is just as good. Like, who's that? Was it Hani who said it? I think it was Hani last night, right? When he said, well, this is just 3 points. That's it. 3 points. No matter if you score 10 or you score 1, well, bring the 3 points home because you're the better team at this point. You're a better team right now. Show it. Go out there. No matter the field, no matter the circumstances, the way they play, but show out there and tell everybody, even in Atlanta, that Nashville is a better team right now, which is true, and beat them. Sorry for them because they're having a tough situation right now in terms of where they are on the table and the latest results. But you worry about your stuff.
I agree.
Just go out there and bring it. I believe Nashville can actually go there and win 2-0 and come back home with the 3 points, which is the main thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I'm going to be there.
Will you?
Just in case. I'm going to be there. I'm traveling with Danny, my son, to cover the game. We leave on Friday night and come back right after the game. We don't want to stay that much, but at least we'll be there.
Okay, perfect. So your score prediction?
2-0 Nashville.
Okay.
I'm going to give Sam another goal, and I'm still waiting, and I want to see it, and I'm going to give it every time until it happens. Eddie Tagsdath, the other one. I want to see Eddie score.
The what? They call him the Norwegian termite? Is that you call him the termite?
The termite is the one. I don't know if he likes it or not, but that's the way I call him.
They call him the Norwegian nuisance, I think, some people.
It fits him, though.
It does. The termite.
He's a
termite.
He's all over the place.
Yeah, he's everywhere.
He's everywhere. He multiplies. Even the coach said it in press conference.
He's everywhere.
He's everywhere.
I love
it. All game long.
Well, I think you're right, Claudio. I think this team gets a clean sheet this weekend. I think Joe Willis is due for a clean sheet. I think the language barrier kind of subsides a little bit. This team has two games now with Palacios and Mayer underneath there at the center back position. I think Yazbek's getting more comfortable, doing a lot of stuff, I think, outside the world of soccer and trying to create better chemistry there. I think that Nahar's chemistry with Palacios, that whole Palacios thing for me is just, it's taken over my brain for the subject matter. But I think Nashville gets a 3-0 victory. I think it's Sam Surridge again. I'm going to go, this is tough. Sam Surridge.
You want Yazbek to score as well.
I would like to see Yazbek score. Here's the deal. I obviously asked him in the presser about his little celebration thing. Hopefully that can all get situated. I'm a big NRL fan. He's a Canterbury Bulldogs fan. And so, I had to get that out there. But he's a Bulldog guy, which is awesome. Stephen Crichton's their big, big superstar out there in Canterbury. So he's from Liverpool, Australia, I think, is what his Wikipedia page says. So which is near it's near the West Tigers.
Liverpool, Australia. Okay. Yeah. I didn't even know there was a city called that name in Australia.
I think that's what it said online. I could be wrong, but I believe it said Liverpool, Australia, which is close to...
I know one thing, though. I'm not going to make any bets because I keep losing them, so I better stay away from bets.
Oh, your little wager with Valer? Yeah, so the people that don't know this, Claudio made a wager a couple weeks ago, and he double or nothinged it last night with either Hani Mukhtar or Sam Surge to get the hat trick first, and he has to now take Valera out to a nice steak dinner and to whatever discretion
taco.
Is...
Correction. Taco stand. Come
taco,
on, man.
Sorry, taco stand. And it looks like I'll be tagging along, so thank you so much, Claudio, for my dinner. I appreciate that. But my three goal scorers are going to be Sam Surridge, Ahmed Kasem off the bench. That's going to be another goal. Third goal, you know what? I'm going to go with Andy Nahar. I think he's been in a good form lately. Andy Nahar deserves a goal. Not in that specific order, but it's all going to transpire that way.
That's good. I like Andy scoring again. Sure, yeah. He deserves it too.
He sure does. He sure does. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Talking Calcio podcast here on the Game Nashville Sports Network. If you have any questions, you want to reach out to us, you can reach out on Twitter for me, NickFrazier23. If you want to reach out to Claudio Villalobos, bingo, I'm getting better at it. Reach out at Nashville Total Sport on Twitter and also Facebook and whatever else you got out there, Claudio, at Facebook, Twitter,
Instagram,
all that. And just give us a question. Put us a question out there. You want us to cover a topic? You want us to know something about it or whatever it is? Let us know. But appreciate everybody listening, and we'll see you on the next episode. Ci vediamo.